that was really trying on their bodies for a lot of stuff with it. Imagine a mock hanging that you had to go through with that, or literally being buried alive, and the mental and physical pressure that that's going to put onto your body and whatnot, or making it so that way you have to hold your breath underwater for a certain amount of time in order to make that happen. So to help with your notion of doing a rebirth ritual and whatnot, there are certain things I want to talk about that people had to do beforehand, had to have an understanding of things beforehand, as well as themes that are brought up between all of the traditions of the world that I'm aware of that have done this particular notion of things. The very first thing that you have to do is that you have to know that there's a higher power than yourself and whatnot. Anybody who does not have that, does not get anything out of this in any way, shape, or form, and it becomes quite obvious that they never get the benefits of this if they don't have this inner knowing and whatnot. This is something you personally do not have to worry about because, obviously, you already believe in a higher power and that kind of thing with it. So step one's already been accomplished for you. Congratulations. I'm just letting you know that this is also technically part of it, for what's happening. Atheists were not permitted to partake in these different things. And if they step through, they never got anything from it. That was the consensus from all the general groups and things that I've read about it. Thing number two is you have to stop lying, especially to yourself. So if you want to have the ritual be the way that you want it to be and go with it and do well, you need to make it so that way you've agreed to stop lying in general about how things are. In other words, it's basically in alignment with reality, what you want, what's happening, that kind of thing with it, and trying to figure out exactly what you want with it. The reasoning behind doing so and being honest with the world around you and other people as well as with yourself is to make it so that way I didn't get what I wanted to from this last year or from the previous life that I had before I decided to go through this ritual and whatnot, but I need something better to come out of this. I need something with that. And you have to be honest with yourself about what went wrong as well as what you intend to get instead, or what you're hoping to get instead, from it, and move towards, with that and that kind of thing with it. So that's another thing, that needs to be done here with it. The next thing is to stop dreaming. There's different variations of what this means, but in modern terms, this is cognitive dissonance. This is where you say one thing, but do another. And so there could be something that's going on that makes it so that way you say one thing and do another. And the perfect example of this for you personally, would be when you're a pagan, you are a heathen and whatnot. You know that there are certain things you believe in and that kind of stuff. And then you talked about a guy who came and blessed you for one of the fights that was Christian with the cross and then that with it. The notion of this is where your beliefs are and what you want to do with it, and then taking up something that is not good for you and what you believe in and whatnot, that action could be what causes all the stuff with your fights specifically, to go on with it. I'm not saying it is the case. That's something for you to deep dive personally and be honest about, like we talked about in the second step, here for what's going on, but that's a version of cognitive dissonance for what's happening, where you have one thing and say you do believe all these things over here and do another. You're causing a dichotomy within yourself, and it gives you the results that you don't want. So to add to this, There are three parts of ourselves that we have to understand with it, which the Norse myths fit perfectly for this. There's our thoughts, our emotions, and our actions. All three of these need to be in alignment in order to make that happen, which is why you have to stop lying to yourself. You have to stop having the dreaming, the cognitive dissonance that we have, in order for all of these to actually get into what you need to be done with it here. All right. And this helps with the rebirth process to make it so that way you're very clear about what you want. So that way you're shedding the old life like a snake would and whatnot in terms of getting rid of its excess skin and being reborn into something else with it. Right. And that's what you need to have for that. That's the next step of things. All right. Now, another part of occult initiation in terms of this death ritual and mock death ritual and whatnot is you need to learn how to think. Now, obviously, what you talked about with the child and all that, it's a different story and that kind of stuff. This is as an adult where we have more control over things with it and whatnot. Now, this is called the trivium method in the ancient Greek traditions and whatnot, but basically it's, if you want to put it in modern terms, you've got input, meaning where your information's coming from. You've got the processing stage, which is where you try to weed out the logical inconsistencies, and then you have the output, all right? With this output stage with it, this creates our world. And if you have, every person goes through these stages of things as they get older and whatnot, and that makes it so that way their entire world is created this particular way. And so it all starts with the information, which is why tyrants of every age target this in the first stage of things with censorship, because if they make that happen, they've already produced the outcome that they want from the get-go and that kind of stuff. How we use this for our particular stuff here, though, in order to go through this initiation, to go through this rebirth ritual and whatnot, is to make it so that way we weed out any logical inconsistencies about the stuff that we say that we don't want anymore and what we do want, and make sure that there isn't anything. We stop the cognitive dissonance between the two. We make sure everything's in alignment beforehand. Doing all these steps ahead of time, and as well as believing in a higher power, is basically purging ourselves of all the BS that happened to it on us in a mental state beforehand. And we're going through an entire process of doing so that needs to be done for that. So then the next stage of things is you got to live in the present moment. So the more you can live in the present moment, the less the past can deal with it, whatnot, and the less you project the past onto the future for what's going on here. Now, obviously, we need to use it for technical knowledge, say, like how to drive a car, as an example. I pick up that. But the moment I'm stopped driving a car, I'm not thinking about driving a car anymore. And I don't need that knowledge anymore that's sitting there with it. That's not what I'm talking about here. We're talking about knowledge that was really trying on their bodies for a lot of stuff with it. Imagine a mock hanging that you had to go through with that, or literally being buried alive, and the mental and physical pressure that that's going to put onto your body and whatnot, or making it so that way you have to hold your breath underwater for a certain amount of time in order to make that happen, birth and whatnot. If you do not commit to the moment and go through these other things properly, as discussed, you will not make it so that way you do what needs to be done and whatnot. And you might get mixed results from it or no results whatsoever. Typically, you won't get negative results if you do it in good faith, which obviously I know you intend to do. If you are, you know, that's just how it plays out for that. And then the next step is that you need to have the physical body activated. And these types of rituals and whatnot, at least in ancient time periods, I don't know how much it was in modern time periods or what it is, if they're still even being practiced in the real way that our ancient forebears actually did and whatnot. They needed to make it so that way it was really trying on their bodies for a lot of stuff with it. Imagine a mock hanging that you had to go through with that, or literally being buried alive, and the mental and physical pressure that that's going to put onto your body and then whatnot, or making it so that way you have to hold your breath underwater for a certain amount of time in order to make that happen. And then I will tell you my own personal stuff a little later in terms of stuff that I'll send to you in a different format rather than record it this way and whatnot that you can read if you're interested in of my own, you know, type of rebirth that occurred through going through some ritual like this. So that's stuff that's on that particular front. All of these things need to be done with that. A hidden step that's above all of these different steps and whatnot, and behind all of these different steps, is what I call true care. And that's where you have to really, truly be behind the notion of everything, really giving your heart, soul, spirit, whatever you want to call it, into it. Imagine the good imagery of this is you need to have your heart as light as a feather, with like Anubis holding the scales up and whatnot. I know it's not, you know, I know that it's not Norse paganism, but that imagery of your consciousness being that light you need to have in order for this to be, as successful as possible, and as plausible for it, and to have the most benefits and the effects that were going on, with this and whatnot. This is actually what I'm working on right now, is a book that has to do with all this stuff, on it. It's very similar to like the hero's journey that Joseph Campbell did, except I'm calling it the initiate's journey, and I have my own version of things that I'm working on towards with it. And a lot of the stuff that I'm doing is about this, and I'm hoping to have the book come out sometime March or April of this next year, and whatnot. So a lot of the stuff is tying into with this right now for what's going on. Anyway, there are other important aspects and themes that are going on with all this. It's not just about going through the hole that you pointed out, or going into the water, or even the like purging of everything that we've talked about here, and making sure everything's good the way that it needs to be done in terms of that. There's other symbolic acts that you can do ahead of time. All those things are good, like with the dolmens that you brought up. None of that I'm detracting from. All that is true, all that's valid, all that's other stuff. I'm giving other layers of themes here in this next section to give food for thought for what's going on. A lot of these rituals were tied also to the heliacal rising of either Sirius or the heliacal rising of Venus. And whatnot. Both have to do with enlightenment, and knowledge and things of, this particular nature in various different pagan and occult traditions for where it comes from, and makes it so that way you have illumination that goes along, with this. Also, most of these rituals in terms of isolating yourself and burying yourself alive and whatnot and all that aren't supposed to just be done on one particular day. It's supposed to be a minimum of 3 days, and a lot of times up to 9 days for what's going on. Maria and her work on the maiden with the mead and a temple at Uppsala and that kind of stuff, with there being some sort of mystery cult tradition and kind of a rebirth notion and idea and that kind of stuff, dovetails perfectly with my research. I thought these traditions died out, at least in terms of Northern Africa, Europe, and Asia, with the exception of India, of course, and maybe certain pockets of China, but for the most part had died out in about the year 500 AD or so. It is quite clear after reading her work and knowing the differences of things with me and myself for what's going on here and my own research and stuff with it, that these traditions continued onward in Europe through the Viking Age, and it was done with the maiden with the mead. as it's called and whatnot. And so just put that out there for whatever that's worth to you. Maybe nothing, maybe everything for what's going on. To add to these things with it, typically north and east is the direction in which you want to be facing in almost all the traditions that there are in the world. It is associated with illumination and enlightenment and a spiritual rejuvenation from the occult standpoint. Once again, every single one of them has to do with something with the earth and the underworld and or water, which also represents transformation and reflection and all these other things that go along with that. Each culture has their own variation of this. You have the pyramid texts for ancient Egypt. You have some of the initiations and rituals in the Poetic Edda that have survived that go on with things with it that, again, she's touched on. Maria has touched on quite a bit. You have various different things that show up in the Celtic traditions, whatever. The point is it's all over the world. And each has their own variation of things with it, but it's the shamanic journey that you were taking, basically a journey of one with it. And I want to dovetail with Freemasonry here for a moment in order to kind of show you some of the stuff, at least in its original form. I'm not talking about what it's become now. I don't know. I'm not part of the Masonic temples in any way, shape, or form. But they have their own rituals that survive through the Templars and all the way up through stuff with it. And one of them has to do with Hiram Abiff, who is a fake mythological figure that's just there for allegorical purposes. And his name, literally, if you break it down, Hiram Above. And I'm bringing this up because this is where the Yule book comes in and the traditions that are with that and goats representing reincarnation and rebirth, also having to do with the sign of Sagittarius, Capricorn, and whatnot. And that's where all these type of things come together, being pulled from it. It's also part of the Norse traditions, as you very much, know. And so here's another aspect that's playing out. With that, you can see this with everywhere and all, that all the traditions for, and they would go most of these places that were these rituals partook, including the dolmens, including, the hypogeum and including the pyramid, the Great Pyramid and whatnot, other the burial mounds, whatever. This was sometimes referred to as the bridal chamber. Okay? And so that gives us a lot of hints for things already. You have Odin, who is the spirit, and he is trying to seek out Freya / Frigg, depending upon, you know, which one you want to look at and whatnot. Even Idun, because all of the female Disir come together into one, and they all have representation of things with it. And so you are awakening your personal Norn, your Valkyria, your Flugir, for what's going on with it. By doing so, and you are making it so that way you are having a true rebirth experience, to where you're not having your personal Norn make it so that way it weaves random fates for you. You're making it so that way it's weaving active fates for you. And that things are going on in a particular point of view for what's happening. And part of how we can do this in a, not just a ritualistic sense, but also in a real world sense, is Nature is a far better planner than you and I or anybody else will be. And we just have to figure out what we stand for, what we actually truly believe in, what's most important to us. And by doing so, we go and we make it so that way we only have to choose the best and most important course of action for us in any given moment. So if we have a North Star, let's say, something we believe in, whatever that is, and we go towards that, it doesn't matter which way the river bends and turns and what fate throws at us. We make it so that way we have the best, if we choose the best option for us, if it's like a river, most people, they're a river that doesn't have a rudder because they don't know where they're going, what they're doing. So they crash into everything and they have to take whatever life throws into us. But if you go through this process of stop lying to yourself, stopping the cognitive dissonance, understanding how to think and where to get stuff, living in the present moment, believing in a higher power, having our activated physical body and whatnot, going through this ritualistic thing of it and making sure that we choose the best course of action for us based upon what our higher principles and beliefs are at every step of the way with it, then we will be able to navigate the river of life no matter what it throws at us, and we will choose the very best possible course of action for ourselves, which makes it so that way we will live the very best possible lives for ourselves. This is the wisdom that's hidden inside of the ancient mystery school traditions and ancient occults and whatnot that are there for that. And I know kind of going all over the place with this here, but I'm trying to bring up everything that's going on with it here. Another time period that a lot of places did it were actually done on also on the equinoxes that they would do this for, not just the solstices. And the whole idea of the bridal chamber is that you're marrying yourself and that you're getting in touch with your soul and letting it do things for you and whatnot and connecting with it directly. There's actually multiple different levels of doing this type of stuff. And the deeper you go into it, the more that you get out of it. And the most of the traditions have three steps that they have to go through minimum in order to do that. And the final one is where you get to the level of like Ator, and seeing everything inside of it, knowing your lineage, knowing who you are, coming back with the mead and all that other stuff, and basically conquering death itself, on a spiritual level at least, and whatnot. Now, I know that's not what you're looking for, but the process of initiation is the same, and maybe you'll get something more, from it, with that. I can tell you that when I didn't understand it all the time because I hadn't done the research for it, and I still have a lot of understanding I need to go through with this. But, you know, I had an outer body experience when I went through this type of stuff, with it. And that's all I'm going to say in this particular recording. If you're interested in more on that particular front for it, I'm more than happy to go into that with you personally, and that kind of thing. Yeah, I think that's all that I need to go into. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns about, what I went, over, let me know. Oh, that's the other thing. They started the, ritual during the day, and it went through the night time with it, and it was made it so that way they would get up just before the sunrise, and they would make it so that way they would see Sirius or Venus if they were doing stuff with those things, And they would witness it right before the sun rose, and then they would see the sunrise for what was going on, kind of as a purging of everything with it. And the night being the underworld part, and the day being the resurrection coming up through everything. With that, I think the 3 days is important too. It fits 100% with the sun on the cross for what it is in the sky and whatnot, and it doesn't go anywhere, and it looks like it's dead for 3 days, and then it starts rising up again on an astro-theological standpoint for stuff with it when you're using astronomy. And I think that this is an important part for it. I think that's why there's also 3 degrees that they did for it. 3 by 3 equals 9. So 3 degrees and 3 days for what's going on equals the 9 days that need to be done with it, which gives us the 9 days that they've done in other traditions, especially the Eleusinian mysteries for what's going on with that. Most traditions, they took some sort of drug or narcotic or things of this nature in order to make it happen. There's lots of traditions that don't do that, of course, too. And there's other rituals that lead up to it that have to do with purging and stuff with it. There's some rhythmic dancing that helps get you in the present moment, or chanting, or some sort of fire ceremony that's done with things with it, using to purge things away and kind of destroy everything that's going on with it. It's not just as simple as going in to the ocean, getting in the fetus position, fetal position, and just letting it do stuff for a little bit and whatnot, or burying yourself in the sand for a little bit, or any of those other things with it. Again, if you're trying to cure a child of these things, like you mentioned, that's a completely different thing, or the child is in a separate category of things with it. We are talking about a rebirth ritual when you are older and whatnot, and it takes longer to reset your mind, so to speak, and whatnot. There's much more to it. There's much higher levels of gnosis that need to be represented in that kind of thing. And this is where I'll leave off with that. If you have any questions, this is getting longer than I anticipated it would be. I hope this is helpful, that you can take kernels of truth and wisdom from it and make it so that way you gain something from this and whatnot, and that it is a boon in your quest for doing things.